Welcome, welcome, ladies and gentlemen.
Let's get started.
Straight from New York, yo, yo, this handsome ass.
Yo, yo,
ah, now, fucker.
Tune in to Al Joe, the funk master. Watch your grill, yoga, knock that cold faster. Talking shit, now we talking facts. With the mountain off the back, you in trouble, came to burst your bubble. I don't shelter punches, they find home on your mind about a double. This the weekly scraps. You don't need a map, GPS, I'm right here to lead a dash. The world doesn't know it needs, but I grow disease. Planet, fuck a name and the fame. Only legacy remains. Remember the name, Al Jermaine Sterling.
It ain't shit, it ain't safe.
Motherfuckers.
What's up, guys? Welcome back to the Weekly Scraps. I'm not even going to say the episode anymore because I really have no idea. We're in the 80s, somewhere in the 80s, somewhere along those lines. But beautiful day outside on beautiful, beautiful Long Island. Ah. UFC Vegas, what a great, great night of fights, especially that main event. Before we get into that, there is a lot of things that were said, a lot of things that were done that I had a lot of thoughts and opinions on over the weekend, and we're going to definitely get into that. But once again, I think it's time I make the investment into Tile because I lost my wallet yet again. So Tuesday, I go to meet my cousin's step pops. He's an electrician, GC, does the whole nine, has a whole crew and everything. I go to meet him at my mom's house about 8:15 in the morning, get there. We go through the whole nine, what we're going to do. I got to go pick out the parts. Okay, boom. Past that, I leave from there, go right to Home Depot. I go right to Lowe's instead of going to training with Wyman. I thought I could fit in the schedule, so pay for the cabinets and then go jet out to Smithtown to go get some training over there. Of course, that didn't happen. I get there, it takes forever, filling out all these paperwork, and then whatever. I pay the bill, about $3,600 for the brand new countertops, granite. And then I proceed to lose my wallet. I'm not sure how I did this again in the span of maybe 3 weeks. I did it in Vegas. I tweeted it. Hey, lost my wallet, possibly at the PI Center. If anyone's seen it, let me know. I get home, I lose my wallet again, and still no call, no show on the wallet. But good thing is I checked the transactions. There has been no usage or activities going on with the credit card, so I'm happy about that. But there is a few dollars in the wallet. Normally, I don't carry any cash, but I did take some cash out when I was in heading out to Vegas, but I didn't use too much of it anyway. And it's in the wallet. So if you find it, I want the card, but if you don't mind giving me the cash back, please, I wouldn't mind that. But so it's just really crazy to see how I'm not usually like this, but I'm getting tortured. My girlfriend's saying it's time for me to get the Tile. Okay, I think it might be time that I get the Tile investment. And this way I can hit a little beep beep, look up on the locator and see where I left my stuff because I just can't seem to get it together. Hopefully this is the last time. Probably not though, but it is what it is. Got some training in this week also. We got some guys gearing up for some fights in August. One guy, we have Dennis Bazookia getting ready to gear up for the Dana White Contender Series in September. I believe it's September 1st. Make sure you guys tune into him. He is the Albanian Dream. Dennis the Great Bazookia. I always laugh at the name, the Great, but, since Dennis is our guy, it's okay. We let him rock with that one. But, we had a good wrestling practice. Surprisingly, I wasn't in too terrible of shape. I taught a little bit, just trying to get everything structured because the training systems right now are a little bit all over the place, just because of the whole pandemic still. But kind of trying to help give these guys some guidance. Like, yeah, I didn't have much structure in terms of what I was going to do the very next day or a couple of days in advance. But after I felt the way I felt, I would tell guys we're going to train at this time the next day, but I would let them know what we were doing like in the morning based on how my body was feeling in the morning. Or if it was early in the week, I knew how my body was feeling. I was like, okay, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to push through it knowing that I'm going to be sore X amount of days, but I have an idea of this is what I want to cover this week and I got to make sure I get that in. So I'm trying to give them a little bit of guidance on that, on how to structure everything, because so many of us, so when we come in and guys, not so many of us, definitely misspeaking on that. We have a small team, but when guys are coming in, And you have one group saying they want to spar or do striking drills, and then the other group wants to wrestle or do grappling on BJJ. Then you kind of have a divide of the numbers that we have that we're already lacking because of the whole COVID-19. So I made sure I stressed that multiple times because it seemed like the first one or two times it fell on deaf ears. And then the third time, of course, it's like, dude, guys need to do their own training, personal training sessions in the morning if they choose to do that. It could be at night. It's up to you. I'm not telling you what to do, but I'm suggesting this is what we do so that we can maximize the usage of the different body types and styles that we have so that everyone can get good quality work. So if half of my guys are sparring and doing this, then they're going to be banged up. And then at the end, when we're about to go live for grappling, for wrestling, or whatever it is that we're doing, cage situations, they're tired. These guys are tired. We're not going to get the same benefit out of it if everyone came in fresh. So do your workout in the morning. Once you bang that out, you got some hours in between, you rest, come back. Now we get a team practice together. And again, this sport is such a big individualized sport. It's not much of a team aspect in the regards of we're going in there together, but it's still a team where you need bodies to work with, who's going to give you good work, good looks, quality looks for your opponents and things like that. So that was the main thing I tried to express to our guys. And hopefully we get a little bit of better work this week, which I do think we will. Today, we're going to be grappling. Today's Monday. Beautiful Monday. And we're going to get some grappling today. I told these guys I'm going to put together some striking drills and stuff like that. We'll do some situations, striking into the takedowns, and just getting everyone kind of in that rhythm and that flow of that MMA aspect, especially after being out of the gym for so long. Cuomo did say pro sports are back and can resume training camp. So this should qualify. Hopefully, it's not an issue with anybody coming to the town, coming to the gym or anything like that. So small groups still, but again, just make sure everything is worked out the right way and in accordance and appliance to everything, whether or not we're training at someone's house or we're going into the gym for the pro guys and getting in our work and getting out of there. So that's just pretty much the way things are being done right now. This is the new norm, unfortunately, and it does suck, but it is what it is. Lastly, I got my kitchen sink. I'm ready to actually put that in. I can't wait. So the template guys came this morning, and unfortunately, my guy who was doing the cabinets seems like he does very quality work. I do not know because I haven't seen the texture, and I don't know what I'm comparing it to. I don't have different cabinets to go by to go, okay, this is high grade, this is middle grade, this is low grade. So he's supposed to come in on Friday. Thursday or Friday morning comes, they cancel, they push back to Saturday, and then they cancel that. And they said it's going to be Monday. I said, okay, not a problem. But the guys from Lowe's, who was like the third-party distributor, they came. And I couldn't call them over the weekend. And they said it was up to me to call Lowe's and let them know. I said, well, Lowe's gave me you guys' number. So I'm thinking I'm in contact with you guys. No one once said, after this, after you make this purchase, everything from here on out goes to Lowe's. They also never said everything from here on out goes to the distributors. But they did say, contact these guys if you need anything. Okay? I need something. They're closed. It's the weekend. What am I supposed to do? Oh, you should have called Lowe's. They could have sent the email. So they would have sent the email that you guys weren't working on. You guys wouldn't have seen till Monday morning. Anyway, makes a lot of sense. But again, rough start to the day. And if I could strangle the guy through the phone, I probably would have put him in a rear naked choke and gave him a noogie. But it is what it is, man. So that was a big headache to deal with. And now I'm here. Troubleshooting some stuff because I'm looking to upgrade this podcast, man. I got some stuff in the works. I'm super pumped up, super excited. Hopefully get this whole team behind me now and we can really build up some quality stuff. So we'll see how that goes. I had to stop recording because I wasn't sure what was going on. It looked like there was nothing showing on here. So I had to make sure that everything was going to be working. And it looks like it is, so hopefully there's no discrepancy with the audio, because that was kind of strange to see. But we should be good. I did test the sound and everything, and it looks like we're good, so I think we're working. Other than that, before we get into the fights, real quick, as always, if you guys don't mind hitting that subscribe and like button, boom, 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 boom. Oh, man, that's all I wanted to say. All right, let's get into it. The weekend rewind. So we had some big fights. First fight of the night, It's a Lau versus Griffin. Everyone's calling Griffin my 2.0, not my 2.0, my 0.50 knockoff. Or they said he's a dollar store brand. Pretty hilarious. I guess they're saying that we look alike, especially with the hairstyles. Kind of similar, but not really. I don't know if I should be offended. It's kind of like, oh, yeah, I look alike. But I don't know if that's what it is. So I'm going to let that one slide and be like, all right. I can kind of see what you're getting at because I guess he's a grappler too. But, you know, there's backpacking levels. You know, I'm just going to put that out there on the table. There's backpacking levels and not everyone could be the OG backpack like Damian Maya and his couple of sons that he has in myself and Juicy F. Ominga, you know. So that was a good fight. Zalau ended up winning 29-28 on all three scorecards. Fun fight. Picking his shots, and people were saying Zalau must not punch hard, but he doesn't. He's really just a pop shotter. He just touches, and he doesn't really put a ton of torque and twist. It's just to be just for speed and the laser-like accuracy where he's just shooting it out and just really just trying to touch you at the end of his punches and keeping the range. This way he could touch, move. He's not killing his shots where you can get in on his legs, even though he did give up the takedowns multiple times, which I was shocked because sometimes he sprawled and looked like he had him beat with the hips. And somehow, some way, Griffin ended up on his back and Zalau fell down. But he did a good job of getting back to his feet multiple times. And that's what I think won him the fight because it wasn't just grappling on his end defensively. It was defensively grappling, getting back up, and then being offensive and landing strikes, which win you the fight. I know Griffin looked like he was a little bit confused by the decision, but in my opinion, it was the right one. You know, you can't just grapple the entire time. You got to land some strikes and some damage because at the end of the day, it is a fist fight. Next up, we have Kay Hansen, round three, armbar, 2 minutes and 26 seconds in. I didn't get to see too much of the fight. I was kind of in and out, hanging out in Long Beach, but, you know, we're hanging out in the water at one of Rebecca's brother's church childhood friends. And I got to see the armbar transition. I thought that was slick. She rolled her up into the armbar, looked like she was going to get the triangle choke. Didn't get the armbar, transitioned to like a modified triangle, and then from there she modified it again into the armbar with the triangle locked up. For the most part, it was pretty much locked up, and she finished the armbar. And I saw that Ronda Rousey gave her a pretty like a little shout out, which I thought was pretty cool, kind of acknowledging her finish and her early career, to say the least. She's 20 years old, very young. I think she has a very high ceiling, and there's a lot of room for growth in comparison to like her and like a Chase Hooper. I would think that her striking might look better than his, but, and that's not to be disrespectful, but it, I mean, you kind of look at it and say like, she looks a little bit more seasoned for her years, you know. It's not like she's, completely rudimentary in the striking department. So that was nice to see. And I do think she has a very, very high ceiling. Next, Tanner Boser versus Felipe Lins, KO punch in round one, 2 minutes, 41 seconds in. I did not think this fight was going to go like this. Big country Roy Nelson, I mean Tanner Boser, went out there, clipped him, put him down. And I thought Philip was the better striker, just coming from his style with his previous fights. I remember the one with Arlovski. His striking just looked a lot more crisp, but Arlovski was able to get out of the way. I hope I am saying the right matchup and hopefully not sound like a complete idiot right now. This is why I need me a Jamie who can fact check me. But I do think he had the crisper striking, but Arlovski was able to just touch and get out of there before he ended up getting clipped. Because we do know Arlovski at this point, his chin is very, very suspect. Which happens. He's been in the UFC for years, been fighting for years. So Father Time is undefeated. But Boser looked good, man. The great fight, I thought. Went out there, got him out of there early, and then called out Maurice Green saying that he was avoiding him. So hopefully they do get to lock that up later on in the summer. Next matchup, Kama Worthy versus Luis Pena. Guillotine choke, kind of like a high elbow guillotine, if I do remember correctly. 2 minutes and 53 seconds into the third round. Competitive fight. I thought it was 1-1 going into the third, possibly. Luis Pena was doing well in the beginning with the exchanges and the grappling. And then for some reason, somehow, some way, he makes a mistake. He shoots in. He leaves his neck out there. Nowhere for him to go. Kama locks it up. And it almost felt like Luis didn't think there was any way he could get submitted. He didn't think Kama might not have had the jiu-jitsu experience to lock up a submission in that situation. And sure enough, he did, of course. And That's a tough one because I think that's his second loss in a row for Luis Pena. Good fight for Kama though, you know. And he said something at the end of the fight, which I liked. Just kind of like saying, like, don't doubt. No, he said, I'm the real fucking deal. I'm the real deal. And I was like, okay, I believe you. You know, he looked good. He did what he had to do. And I like his striking. No, it's not his. So he lost to Favola, came back, bounced back, and beat Steve Garcia by decision, and then lost to Kama Worthy for Luis Pena. 6-3, man. 6-3 at that weight class. I don't understand it. Good fight, though. Kama is definitely a guy to keep your eyes out for in that stacked UFC lightweight division. And I'm looking forward to see what he does next, especially his range. He seems like he has these Dalzim-like arms where they're just like, yoga flame, yoga flame, or like Saget. Tiger uppercut, tiger knee, you know, that type of shit. And if you play Street Fighter, you know what the hell I'm talking about. Now, this next fight, Erosa versus Woodson. Good fucking scrap, bro. Darkstroke, round 3. Finish for Erosa. Came off the couch. Got the call up from the UFC. Short notice fight. Went out there. Nothing to sweat. Nothing to lose. No pressure. Cool as a cucumber. And gets it done against a very, very hyped up Short Woodson. 6'2 and a half. I believe that was his height. Erosa for himself, luckily, was 6'1". It's not like he was fighting. It's not like Woodson was fighting Bochniak again, a guy who was like 5'7", 5'8". Where the height discrepancy as well as the reach discrepancy is just huge. I also believe Woodson had a 78 reach advantage in comparison to Erosa, who had like a 72, I want to say, maybe 73. But either way, man, he had a huge advantage in both departments in the height. Well, the height, if it was an inch and a half, not that huge. But with the height and with the reach, it's something unreal. It just looks like he's a comic book character. He's got these long, dangly arms. His chest cavity appears huge. Then his waist is, like, really, really thin and like, not even narrow. It's, like, wide, but it's thin. Like, if you look at him from a side profile, it, like, curves, like, inwards, which is super weird to look at. I don't know. I don't know how he makes the weight. I feel like he has a big enough frame where he can bulk up and go 155. He doesn't look super slow. Surprisingly, you would think a guy like that who's cutting that much weight would be a lot slower than those guys at 45. I will say Rosa was definitely faster when he threw his punches, but he didn't have the range to clip him on the outside. So he needed to get inside, slipping one of Woodson's jabs or his crosses, who is constantly on his bike, touching and moving. So to be a fighter like Erosa, who has to sit on the outside and deal with that reach advantage, not easy to do, especially when the guy's not throwing hooks for you to get underneath. He's throwing straight punches and he's touching at the very end of his punches, giving him an opportunity to still touch, bring his hands back to defend, and at the same time slide his feet to get out of the way of dangers from strikes. So Erosa did a good job, eventually got him down. First takedown attempt, showing Woodson got back up to his feet. Second one, he took him down, and he managed to spit out. I don't think it was a Granby. He, like, spun out, got back to the front. They were facing each other. Did a good job, 2-on-1 in for Woodson. Got back to his feet, but Erosa managed to lock on his bicep. And he lost it, but he kept the hook on his head and then locked it up on the bicep, hit the dart stroke, and finished him a couple of seconds later. And I thought that was a beautiful performance. Back against the wall, being cut from the UFC after his first run. He's a tough veteran from the Tough Ultimate Fighter show. Had a couple of fights in the UFC under the official banner. Came up short, had an up and down career in the UFC. And to come back and take out a prospect like that, I think it says leaps and bounds about the progress that Erosa has made as a fighter and as an individual. So I'm looking forward to see what his next outing is going to be. Woodson as well. He has a bright future. Clearly, it seems like grappling is not his strongest suit. But there's lots of room for improvement when you're so high level in one spot, which is the striking, utilizing the footwork. He doesn't look like where Zabit cuts that weight in that third round. Zabit normally looks fatigued in that third round. Woodson didn't look fatigued. He just looked like Erosa. It looked like he was more frustrated that he couldn't put Erosa away with all those strikes that he was landing. Because Erosa at some point was putting his hands down, slipping and ripping. And he did drop Erosa in that third round, but Erosa came back. I think it was the second or third round. But Erosa came back and managed to still weather the storm and stuck in there, hung tough, and it showed what experience could really do. And if you keep pushing the pace, you know, just never giving up, man. That was a battle of wills. And to see the underdog come out like that and to get a finish, that's huge. That's huge. Takashi Sato defeats Jason Witt by TKO round 1, 48 seconds in. Beautiful finish, beautiful knockout. Caught him with the left hand, southpaw orthodox, I believe, with the stances. He was able to take him out. He is a Japanese fighter, so he gives the Japanese culture a little bit more hope, you know, that they still have some talented fighters in the biggest stage of MMA. So that's nice. That's nice for me to see, because we have some Japanese fighters at our gym in Mizuki Inoue. We have Naoki Inoue, who used to be in the UFC. They cut him after going 1-1, split decision loss to Matt Schnell, and they cut him after that, which is very surprising because he's a super, super high level, and he was really young when he got to the UFC. So for them to cut him really didn't make all that much sense to me, especially at 125. He's a big, big boy. You got him. You have his sister. So they are brothers and sisters. And then you have Oka Sasaki, also used to fight under the UFC banner, got cut, fought for Ryzen. Unfortunately, his last fight didn't go too well. But it's just nice to see these high-level guys from the Japanese culture coming through and still showing that they can still perform at the highest level. It's always nice to have one representative from your motherland, your country, you know. So that's always cool. Brendan Allen versus Kyle Daukaus. What a crazy fight. 30-27 was the one questionable decision I had. I was like, I don't know what that judge is watching, but for you to have back control, I want to say at least 4 minutes of that round, and then for him to lose the round really didn't make a whole lot of sense in my mind. You have to have dropped that guy as soon as you've gotten out and piss-pounded him where it looked like the ref was about to stop the fight multiple times in a matter of a minute. When how much of that can you possibly do for you to really sway the judges, and how often does that actually happen? Both these guys went to war beating. They beat the crap out of each other, you know, back and forth affair. And to see the fight go like that, I wasn't surprised about that. I was just surprised about that decision, 30-27. 29-28 for me. But definitely not a 30-27. This is the problem with judging in MMA. We need to get this fixed. I don't know what we do or where we go from here, but it's just constantly these things where there's such a huge discrepancy for all these guys, and we don't know what we need to do when we step in that octagon to be sure that if the fight goes the distance, that we're going to get our hands raised, you know? So it's a very difficult situation to be when you're an athlete out there. So it's tough, man. So hopefully we can get a grasp on this thing and make these fights better for everyone who's involved. You know, it's tough. It's tough, man. I really don't know. I don't know what to do at this point. I just think for us to be a fighter, we have to put in technically a year of training before we can have our first fight. That's like the rule of thumb. And to see that these guys can get their judging license so quickly, and I could be misspeaking. I don't know what actual rigorous activity you have to do. I'm going to assume that there's none. Probably just maybe a demo class here or there. But I don't think they actually train for a couple of months before they can understand the effects of the moves that are being done in the octagon at the highest level of the game, which is within the UFC. And that's my biggest gripe with everything. Other than that, man, I'm Gucci. But these refs need to learn. Not the refs. These judges need to learn. They need to understand what's going on, as well as the ref. You know, I think refs need to make sure they're on the same page and putting themselves in training situations so that they understand what's going on and what the fighter mindset could be like in certain particular situations, so that it's not just completely subjective up to what you think you know. Because if you go based on only what you think you know, then there's going to be a lot of chances and a lot of room for error because you think you know, but you've never seen it or been in that position. So how could you really know, if that makes any type of sense whatsoever? Before we get to the next fight, I want to give a big shout out to my sponsors at Sleepy Bear, sleepybear.com. Check those guys out. My guys hit me up all the time. And let me grab my other one. Now, the good thing about Sleepy Bear is I use this. It has CBD and CBN, which is what I like. And there's a couple of modes on this. The first one is sleep, slumber for two. So sleep is one bear. Slumber is two bears, and hibernation is three bears. So you check these guys out. It's got a lot of stuff in there for you. all natural too. There's no, it's third party tests, so none of that extra craziness. So if you have trouble sleeping, this is one of the things I like to use, and it puts me out. So I take it, if I'm gonna go to bed at, trying to go to bed before 11, I'll take it at like 9, just because there's a little bit of melatonin in here as well, and I want to make sure that kicks in before I start to feel a little woozy and whatnot, because I don't want to kick in later in the night where I'm asleep, and then when I wake up, I kind of feel drowsy. So I try to take it a couple of hours before, like two and a half hours before I want to go to bed, so that when it kicks in, you know, when I wake up in the morning, I'm not taking it. If I'm not jumping in bed at 12 and taking it at 12, that wouldn't make a lot of sense. You know, I want to make sure I'm taking it earlier so it can kick in my body. And then from there, I can bounce it out, wake up in the morning and not feel like I'm still in that sleep mode. I want to wake up feeling refreshed and feeling great. So check these guys out, sleepybear.com. Use my discount code, FUNKMASTER, for your percentage off. Check them out and tell them I sent you. Next fight, Maurice Greene versus Gian Vellante. Oh, man, my heart breaks for this one, obviously, for multiple reasons. Vellante's our guy, you know, the heartthrob of Long Island. Boom, 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 boom. The one guy, grown-ass man, you could find in the bar in Long Beach, taking his shirt off in the summertime and probably even in the winter times, because he's just crazy Gian, the heartthrob Vellante. That's just what he does, and that is his MO. Fun fight, man. So close. His heavyweight re-debut, I guess, because he used to fight a heavyweight, went down to 205, and he was having success. I thought this was a good matchup for a guy who had a suspect chin, and that was one of the things I said to Vellante. I do think his chin is a little suspect. I think if he can get inside and clip him, he can put this guy down, and he did clip him, and he almost got him out of there in that third round. First round was really, really close, back and forth. Maurice Greene was landing these strikes, but Vellante saw everything. He was just walking him down. Maurice Greene kept throwing those oblique kicks, kept stomping at his knees, jabbing from the outside. Not much work going on from both guys. Some outside leg kicks. I guess a little for heavyweights, that was decent work rate, actually. A lot of leg kicks from Maurice Greene. It did look like it was starting to have a little bit of an effect on Vellante, which, you know, showed that he was doing his homework. And then Vellante started to land his kicks and stuff in the second round, and he started to really hurt Maurice, where he looked like he buckled him, and Maurice actually switched his stance. Fast forward, third round, come back. I thought the second round was really, really close. I thought Vellante might have gotten it, or he might have been down two rounds to none. But that third round, things looked very, very positive, very, very optimistic for Vellante from our end. And we thought he was going to be able to get the job done. But unfortunately, he almost had the TKO at the end. But Maurice Greene was able to slap on a head and arm choke from half guard. And, I heard the cornerman, someone in the corner was yelling, elbows, elbows, elbows. But the positioning wasn't right. So if you go back and you watch the fight, before they were screaming for the elbows, Vellante's arm was over the head. His left arm was over the head of Maurice, which even in the first place allowed Maurice to do that. He was kind of resting his arm on top of the chest, and the kind of thing was like over his head, and somehow slid across his face, which gave him the opportunity to lock up that head and arm choke. So instead of the elbows, Vellante, even if his arm was across, the right instruction for me that I would have possibly given, and obviously I'm not trying to judge or compare people, but what I would have liked to have seen him do would be to adjust the positioning and his framing of his left hand either on the throat of Maurice to get him uncomfortable, force him to move and either give up his back to turtle or give up the mount position. Because once you move, you kind of lose a little bit of that grip on your legs with that half guard position, if that makes sense. So you get a little uncomfortable here. You start to only being able to focus on one or two of those things at an optimal level. So when there's no threat, you can relax. You can keep that squeeze on that leg in that half guard position as long as you want. But now you're trying to breathe. You got to move. Now for your focus on both at 100% focus, it's like trying to divide your attention to two different places. It's very, very difficult. You might be able to divide, and as Vellante goes to try to go mount, you could try to reclaim that guard quick, but it's very, very difficult, and it leaves a lot of room and opportunities and windows for your opponent to make an adjustment. So that's what I would have tried to walk Vellante through. Left elbow on the throat, frame with the left elbow, frame the face with the left elbow, or put the left hand, get a left hand underhook. You know, either one of those things would have been great. Even if Vellante threatened with a Kimura lock with that left hand, as opposed to just leaving it on the mat for Maurice Greene to lock him up in that head and arm. If he threatened with the Kimura lock, his right thumb in the armpit of Maurice Greene, even if he goes to lock his hands around Vellante's head, it gives him an opportunity to sit and catch his wrist with the right hand and lock up a Kimura grip and at least look to try to work from there. Vellante's not the most jiu-jitsu savvy guy, but he is tough, and he does have some solid positions. Obviously, at the heavyweight position, if he gets there, it can be a very bad night, you know. So it looked good up until that, man. Pretty competitive fight. I think arguably the best Vellante has looked in a while. Not despite his physique and his dad bod that he had grown, the Imprego belly that he had going on there, which we were all breaking his balls about back home. But I thought he was seeing everything, seeing the strikes. Nothing seemed to get him flustered. He wasn't like rattled by anything. He was just stalking the opponent. And I think that was the best I've seen from him in a very long time, where he's very composed and took his time with everything. I would argue that there was some stuff he could have done better with, like the output, where Maurice Greene was like, ha, ha, ha. I thought he was like Dominic Cruz. Ha, 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 ha. But he could have maybe doubled up on the jab, maybe gone to the body a little bit more, and maybe even follow up off those leg kicks that he was turning Maurice with, follow back with a big left hook or 3-2, that type of thing. Other than that, I thought he fought a pretty good fight. Maurice Greene did well. And it's hard to really say that was a head and arm choke if it was more exhaustion. In my opinion, I'm going to say it's more exhaustion from Vellante more than anything. I'm pretty sure it was on, like tight, but not tight where if it was the first round, Vellante wouldn't be getting submitted by that, if that makes more sense. Obviously, I'm not trying to discredit anything from Maurice. He put the work in. He was in better shape than Vellante, clearly. And that has to be credited for something. So on that night, he was definitely the better man. So congrats to him on that and getting the job done. And I love his post-fight speech, talking about he wanted to move to New Mexico, and the only way for him to do it, he had to go get the win. And it could always be worse. Vellante could have lost to a complete douchebag, could have lost to like a cringy person like Sayudo or someone cocky who just talks shit, and you're just like, oh, I can't believe I lost to that guy. You know, so good kudos for that. You know, so Vellante didn't lose to a terrible, terrible person. So I'm at least happy about that. Next fight, co-main event, Mike Perry versus Mickey Gall. Three-round fight, 29-28. This was a very, very interesting fight for many reasons. I love a couple of things that Perry did, and I didn't like a couple of things that Perry did. I like some things Mickey Gall did, of course, but let's be honest. The story about this fight was about Mike Perry and leaving his girlfriend, leaving his team, training with his new girlfriend and having her corner, and not really having much of a training camp. Besides, what I would like to imagine, I know he mentioned he went to a couple of jiu-jitsu gyms and was training like that, but ideally, that wasn't an ideal fight camp, and I'm pretty sure he would admit that too. And if I have to be honest, I was one of those guys who was definitely counting him out in this one. I thought the cards were stacked against him in the favor of Mickey Gall, who is not the best athlete in one particular area. He's game. He's tough when it comes to jiu-jitsu. But overall, as an MMA package, the way he moves on the feet, his striking overall, he's not the cream of the crop at 170, the welterweight division. You understand what I'm saying? So if you disagree, please let me know in the comments below and we can have a discussion about this. But like I said, I do think Mickey Gall was better with everything going into the fight. He had a training camp. He was working with guys who were trying to give him Mike Perry looks, as far as I know. Because if you're in a training camp, why would you not get looks of your opponent? So I'm going to assume the better of him and his team, that they had people coming and trying to simulate the Mike Perry pressure and pace and swinging the bomb, so you could get an idea of what that's going to feel like. And of course, you're never going to know what it feels like to actually get in there with your opponent who's really trying to separate you from your consciousness. Because some of those heaters that Mike Perry was throwing had bad intentions written all over it. So with that being said, I thought Gall had the training camp. Yeah, he was going to have the better conditioning. I thought he had the edge in grappling, and I knew he was getting better at striking. So with those things, I thought on paper, Mike Perry was going to be a little bit outmatched. Not saying that he was the worst fighter, but I knew, we already know, Mike Perry is an animal. He's a savage. We've seen the fights he's been in. We know the type of mindset he has. He goes out there, he's a dog. He's willing to bang. That's just his MO. That's what he likes to do. But outside of that, the paper just looked stacked against him. And the fact that he wasn't going to have any corner advice trying to improve some of the things that he could be doing better in the fight. And I understood. We're going to get to what he was saying in his post-fight speech as well. But the main thing for me was that. That was the telltale of the fight. Now, when the fight happens, a couple things happen and the show shine through. Mickey Gall seemed to be the better, cleaner striker. I thought that was easy to see. Mickey Gall's fatigue kicked in sooner than Mike Perry's, which I thought was extremely alarming. Like, how, Sway? How? I know he lost to Diego Sanchez, but he chalked it up to something, him being sick or something along those lines, and whatever. That's neither here or there. That was in the past. So I thought he made the adjustments, and maybe he just took care of his body better, didn't get sick. Okay, third round comes. He's fatigued. Halfway through the second round, he looked a little fatigued as well. And Mike Perry just seemed to be getting stronger and stronger as the fight went on. Perry picked him up, slammed him. Gall grabbed the cage, which I want to say on like three different occasions, which was shocking. And I get it, man. It's just one of those things. And one of the other situations was Mickey Gall didn't try to use his grappling at all. He shot. I know he's not a wrestler, so his takedowns might not be the best, but he didn't really try to like pull guard and then try to use like a half guard into a single leg sweep. He didn't seem to use any of those jiu-jitsu setups whatsoever. It was just more so him just weathering the storm that never ended with Mike Perry, and it was not a good turnout for him. And I, like, again, like I said before, I think his striking showed much improved. I want to say he landed more strikes than Mike Perry did for sure, but Perry landed the harder, more significant strikes, picking up Gall, slamming him down with an arm trap. Good thing he didn't slam him on his head, because that could have easily been a KO on that canvas when your arm is trapped. That's why I want that mat return is actually illegal in folk style wrestling. If you trap the arm, you cannot take your opponent to the trapped arm side. So if someone gets behind me, locks this arm with a body lock, and this arm is free, if they take me to this side, I'm okay. But if they take me to this side, I can't protect myself. And that is an illegal mat return, an illegal slam in high school and college wrestling. So with that situation, I thought, when he picked him up, I was like, bro, he slammed him, he landed. I was like, okay. Because that could have been ugly really, really quick. And we all know slams head first on the canvas. It's not a pretty thing. Imagine, I always relate MMA to a street fight. Like, if you take out the canvas and you put that on concrete and you're in some back alleyway and someone does that to you, good luck. Call the ambulance. And I hope you weren't involved, because the cops are going to need, they're going to have a lot of questions for you. They're going to have a lot of questions for you, you know? So that was it was a good fight. And I thought Perry looked good, man. He shut me up because, like I said, I was a naysayer. I was like, dude, you need a corner. You need to have a vice. You need to have someone experienced. You can't just have some rando in there, because then you're not even going to listen to them if they're a rando in there. But it's his girlfriend. I get it. And the stuff he was saying, I just want her to sit there and look beautiful. You know, that's it. And she needs to see her man is a savage. And I was listening. I was like, dude, I can't tell if this is like straight out of a movie or this guy's for real. Whatever it is, it was fascinating to say the least. But when he won, he went back, they announced his name. He was like, and I ain't messing with none of y'all. He's like, I don't mess with none of y'all. He was pointing to the camera after they announced his name as the winner. And he goes to the back. He does an interview, post-fight speech. And I thought it was one of the greatest speeches of 2020 outside of coming on that ass. But I thought it was great, man. He did a very phenomenal job breaking down the stuff that was going on in his immediate life. Now, he said you don't need a corner. Guys yell too much and all this. And I get it. I actually agree with him to a certain extent. There are going to be those fights where your skill is going to be so evenly matched where you don't know where you're going to prevail until you get in there with your opponent, and you might not be able to nitpick what it is that you're doing better than your opponent because you're just going so back and forth, where your corner might be able to see something that you're not seeing and give you that tidbit of information either during the round or in between the rounds. And that could be the changing and you winning the fight and advancing in the gauntlet of your division to either get ranked or fight for a world title. Now, can Mike Perry take his girlfriend all the way to the top and win a UFC belt? I'm going to say the short answer is no. And there might be a little bit of a gray area, but it comes down to your capabilities, your skill set. I don't know if Mike Perry has the full skill set right now. He can later, but right now, his skill set to win at the welterweight division where guys are so well-rounded and so much faster, like a Masvidal. Masvidal's going to have great conditioning. Masvidal's got great jiu-jitsu. Masvidal's got great stand-up. Tyron Woodley, maybe not Tyron Woodley, because he's kind of, you know, he's kind of on the downside of his career. I'm going to say he's a little bit more gun-shy than he's been in the past. But you get guys like Ponzinibbio. You get guys like Leon Edwards. You got guys like even Cerrone, who actually beat Mike Perry already. You got guys like, who else is at the welterweight division? Kamaru Usman. You got Gilbert Burns. Those guys are not going to let Perry off the hook once they get him hurt. Because there was a couple of times where, man, Mickey Gall cracked him clean. And I'm like, man, if this was anybody else, this fight goes a completely different way. And obviously, we're talking about now. Over the years, the next few months, Mike Perry can get better. But you need a team to do that, not just your girlfriend. So I'm trying to give you guys perspective on where I'm coming from. I'm not trying to sound like a hater. I'm giving my honest opinion and my intuition based on what I've known and what I believe in. And just because what I believe in is based on what the training stuff that I've done and the things that I've seen and studied, you don't have to take it as gospel, but this is just my insight and my opinion. So if you guys understand what I'm saying, give me a hell yeah in the comments. If not, tell me to go piss off or something. But I'm glad Perry won. Let me not say glad. Either guy won, I really couldn't care less. But I'm glad he won and proved a lot of people wrong because it gives him a lot more hype. It gives him a lot more viability. And the whole thing he was talking about was taxes. That crushed me, man, because I know exactly where he's coming from. I dealt with a similar situation. And even after doing the right things, I still dealt with a big situation. If you go back to my previous podcast where I was talking about taxes earlier for this year in 2020, $73,000 in taxes for New York State. Not just New York State and federal altogether, but total of taxes and everything, Medicaid, Social Security, all that. $73,000 worth of taxes. That's a lot of freaking money going to who? I don't know whose pocket they're lining. They're lining someone's pocket because, I don't know, New York takes so much of our money and I can't see where they're putting the money to. I don't know. But we are taxed out of the ass. But I'm glad he brought that up to the forefront and hopefully a lot of other young fighters, because all eyes are watching fights like that, especially with the whole shenanigans of the corner, his girlfriend, you see Perry hitting pads in the back and people are like, oh man, this looks bad. And all I could write was like, yo man, I got a lot of thoughts. That's all I got. I got a lot of thoughts of what I'm watching right now, because he was hitting pads on the wrong side. He was going left to her right hand as opposed to crossing over where we cross over to turn over your punch. He was going straight out like that and then throwing the knees. I was like, ugh, I got a lot of thoughts on this. I don't know if this one's going to end up pretty, but it did. It ended up pretty for Mike Perry, and congrats to him again. And of course, again, like I said, the taxes, there are a lot of things that we need to do. And I did do a segment on this, but I want to get someone who's kind of like a tax expert so we can kind of chop it up and talk accounting and talk what you can do to utilize the loopholes out there to take advantage of these things. I mean, I could do a podcast on just the simple knowledge that I have. That would be like 5-8 minutes discussing the things that I know. Personally, I have an S corp and I have an LLC. I only predominantly use the S corp right now because the adventures that I had for the LLC, I never actually got to use it or do anything with it. So yeah, that's where I'm at right now. But other than that, great fight, man. Hopefully Perry can get the fight with Darren Till. I love the animosity between them right now. That's just how I am. I think as fans, we say we want to see respect, but at the same time, to have drama build up the fight, it's just so great. And they're different weight classes now. Darren Till is now up at 185, but I believe he said something like, I would raw dog your girl, something like that. And Perry, it seems like he lost after that. He was like, yo, if I see him in person, we're fighting and no one's going to stop me, because that's it. That's just it, which is like, yo, the security levels are going to be through the roof. Through the roof. Now, this next fight, the main event, crazy, 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 crazy. Dan Hooker versus Dustin Poirier. Fight of the year candidate, yes or no? I think so. If you guys think this was a fight of the year candidate, let me know. I mean, obviously, we had Joanna versus Zhang Weili, but that was a great fight, too, especially for the females. That was an epic fight and crazy fight, no matter what. It's a fight, no matter the gender. It's a crazy freaking fight. Now, you got this one, no matter the gender, it's a crazy freaking fight. It's insane what these guys put their bodies through, and the fact that none of these guys quit, my head was reeling. I felt like I was watching Dustin Poirier versus Justin Gaethje all over again. I felt like I was watching Eddie Alvarez versus Dustin Poirier all over again. Dan Henderson versus Shogun Rua all over again. Even Jose Aldo versus Chad Mendes 2 all over again. I was like, dude, this fight is nuts. John Jones versus Gustafsson, the first fight. This fight was one of those legendary historic fights that is just going to be something that we look back at like, how are any of these guys standing? There was no loser in that fight. But unfortunately, in this sport, there is a loser. And it sucks because I'm going to give some perspective behind it. Dustin Poirier has a war twice with Eddie Alvarez, 2 wars. He has a war with Max Holloway. He has a war with Justin Gaethje. And there was another war that he had, Dan Hooker. That's 5 wars. 5 war fights that he had. Crazy, which is just like, what do you do at this point? And I know there was one more. I'm trying to figure out the name that he had. If I could figure it out, that would be great. But the fact that he could put his body through that type of punishment and still perform at a high level is something remarkable. Like, you don't see that very often. I'm trying to see. There was one more fight he had that was insane. So he had Dan Hooker. He lost to Khabib. That was a crazy fight too, but it wasn't a war where, you know, he took the more of the brunt end of that. It was more exhaustion from being out grappled and some ground and pound here and there. But then you have the Max Holloway, Eddie Alvarez, Justin Gaethje, Anthony Pettis. That's the one. And oh yeah, and Jim Miller. So he had Hooker, Holloway, Alvarez twice, Gaethje, Pettis, Jim Miller, and the one with Michael Johnson, he got knocked out. So those are 7 wars right there. And then if you want to count the Joseph Duffy fight, that was a banger too. So it's like, how much of that can you go through in your career? He's 31 years old, born in January. So he just turned 31. And you would think that, man, he's been fighting for so long. 26, his record is 26-6. And then you got a guy like Dan Hooker, who is kind of on that same trajectory with having these wars, where it's like, dude, how many of these fights can you constantly have? Hooker had a body beatdown against Edson Barboza. Insane fight, incredible fight. His organs got rearranged with spinning back kicks, body shots, liver kicks. Everything was thrown at him. His head, everything. Then he has the scrap with Al. He didn't take that much damage as the other fights. But then you had the one with Poirier. You had the one with Paul Felder. You had this one with Edson Barboza. So when you look at that, you're kind of now wondering how many of these fights can these guys have? Let's see how old. Now, Dan Hooker is 30 years old. James Vick, he knocked him out. Gilbert Burns, he knocked him out in the first round. Miller, he knocked him out in the first round. Mark Diakese choked him out in the third round. So he's had some tough fights. He lost to Jason Knight. And you have to wonder, how on earth did he lose to Jason Knight? He's had some tough fights, man. So I think it says a lot about his career, a lot of up and downs. But if he's getting to that point where he's going to have all these wars and these type of matchups, it's going to take some time off of his career. For sure, because there's only so many of those fights you could be in. And if you look at Poirier, he took that one shot from Conor McGregor, landed right behind the ear. He could not recover. That was him cutting down to 145. Now he's at 55, been on a tear, former interim champion, came up short against Khabib, bounced back in a very, very big way after his surgery against a tough, tough Dan Hooker, who looked yoked for this fight last weekend. Looked yoked, like a physical specimen. I know they said New Zealand, they couldn't really train at the gym, so he put a lot of time and effort in the physical department, and it showed. When he was shaking his arms out, I was like, dude, that guy's looking stacked right now. And I say the same thing over and over, man. Like, I feel Poirier can only have those type of wars so much longer for the rest of his career. You know, at some point he's going to get clipped where his eyes are going to roll back to the back of his head. And at that point, we're going to know, like, yeah, man, you're getting to that point of no return where I think it's time for you to hang him up or find an exit strategy, because this is not looking good. Now, a couple of things I love, man. The back and forth wars, the early 2 rounds. I thought Hooker was doing a great job of utilizing that inside leg kick right to the calf. And every time Dustin tried to step in, he would snap out that long jab, that left jab, that nice long jab. So inside right kick, boom, to the calf. Every time Poirier tried to capitalize on it, stick out that long jab, and Dustin's running into the jab. And then following up with his combinations. And of course, as the fight goes on, Dustin does land his shots. They do trade a bit. But for the most part, rounds one and two was definitely all Hooker all day long. And then the third round was when things started to change for me. I could start to see the momentum shift once Hooker took him down, landing his guard, and gave him the opportunity to start landing, gave Dustin Poirier the opportunity to start landing some elbows. At that point, I was like, yeah, things are starting to look a little bit different now. The tide is changing. Hooker's starting to look like he's showing more signs of fatigue. But then he would come through with these flurries, and then they'll throw in these massive body shots. There was sometimes in the clinch where Hooker would just tee off like a 2-3 punch combination and bing, 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 right to the body. And I'm like, how the hell is Poirier holding on? There was one point in the clinch where Dustin had the tie clinch, and he throws like a sideways karate chop. Not even a chop, but like a club with his fist, almost like a hammer fist, right to the neck, the jawline, to Dan Hooker. And then later in the rounds, Dan Hooker's jaw is wide open. I'm thinking he broke his jaw. So in my head, I'm like, I think Hooker might have broke his jaw early in this fight, somewhere around the third or fourth. And I'm thinking that those chops right to the jawline might have been the culprits to do that, because he held him, turned him sideways, and just said, bow, bow. I'm like, yo, that's some next level street shit right there, because I never seen nothing like that. That's like, yeah, I'm trying to hurt you. I'm not trying to punch you. I'm trying to really do some significant damage. And it looked like he might have done it in that fight. I don't know. We didn't see any reports besides the stitching. And just to go back to what I was saying, man, seeing Hooker go for the takedowns a couple of times, you could tell that the fatigue was definitely starting to set in. And obviously, it's a 25-minute fight. For anyone to be in shape to go at that pace for that long, 25 minutes is very, very, very hard, very difficult. And only few people are going to be able to do that and shine against the top of the division. It's not easy, man, to do that with a Dustin, to do that with a Tony Ferguson, to do that with a Gaethje, to do that with a Khabib, to do that with a Iaquinta go five rounds, even a Kevin Lee to go five rounds. It's hard. And a lot of people, their cardio fails them. And again, it's hard to do against the toughest of the toughest guys who got that cardio and the duration to last that long in a 25-minute fight. So I get it. I get why you're fatigued. And again, that pace was insane. I thought one of those guys, I thought they were going to punch themselves out and just at a point just sit there and just punching each other in the ribs or some shit. I don't know. It was a fun fight to watch. And again, it sucks to see that someone has to lose a fight like that, because really there's no loser. But someone does lose. Someone doesn't get the other half of their paycheck. Someone doesn't get to move on and advance into the upper echelons of the division, talking about a rematch for the world title, or even if it's not a rematch for the world title, we're talking getting into title contention. So there's a couple of things, like losing a fight like that can have some negative effects. At the end of the day, you're going to be super popular amongst fans. Like, yeah, you might have lost, but you went to war. It's a fight that's going to be historic forever. It's not a fight you could ever be ashamed of. But man, Poirier turned on those burners. The only thing I didn't like was him jumping for the guillotine multiple times. I thought that put him in bad spots, a couple of situations where Hooker was shooting. And I thought if he didn't pull guard, if he just threatened with the guillotine, he could have gotten to the turtle position a couple more times as opposed to working up from his back. So if you jump guillotine, for you to get back up when the guy pops his head out, and work to get back up, where if you stop the takedown with the guillotine, and instead of jumping for it, you threaten it, the guy has to defend, or he pushes through and gets the takedown, or you hit the cage and you could defend, you got a better chance of stuffing the opponent, landing some elbows, landing some shots to really wear down on your guy. And I just think in that situation, that's more fight IQ and fight experience. And obviously, Duffus is a guy way more experienced than me, but I'm just saying from my mindset, if I see that the guy is dying, and he's shooting, and you know, for me to pull guillotine, I'm like, do I lose a position and risk this guy ending up on top and him getting an opportunity to rest? And even though he slashed him up with elbows and he got up a couple of quick times, but that change in the action where you could defeat a guy if he shoots and puts everything into it and he doesn't get it and he has to get up, or he's on his knees in the turtle position and he's just like, oh, this sucks. Now I'm getting punched in the head. Now the ref is saying, fight back, improve your position. That's where you could get that advantage, where the guy's going to have to make a decision in his mind mentally. Like, I'm either going to check out right here and just have the ref save me, or I'm going to fight through this and dig deep and find a way to get back to my feet and endure more punishment. And I think if he had done that one, two, or even for that third time, he jumped for that guard, for that guillotine, I think he gets him out of there, even though he almost got him out of there at the end. And at that point, in that end of that fifth round, I was like, oh, this is just bully talk right now. Sitting in a Khabib position, throwing in these short punches, sticking out his tongue to his coaches. I was like, ah. Oh. I was like, talking about putting an exclamation point on it and showing that you're the fresher and more dominant guy. And Dustin Poirier looked good, man. I had him picked in that fight anyway, but to see how he did it, to see how Hooker is just a freaking, he's unreal. He is unreal. Kudos to both guys. That was a fun fight. Definitely a fight of the year candidate, in my opinion. I do want to get some breakdowns on some potential fight situations. I'm still got to finish the garage. I got the wall padding that's almost done. I got to just put the sticky adhesive on it and then get it up. And then from there, I can get everything going and really start to put out some more technique videos. So if you guys got anything in particular that you want to see, or you have some questions that you want me to address in the next video, let me know. I'm going to do a breakdown on the Usman and Gilbert Burns matchup, just discussing what makes this fight so spectacular to me. And all the things that are happening on the outside, you know, them being training partners and all that. So we're going to discuss that and get into some detail on that. And I think that's going to be a fun clip for people to watch and see what my thought process is on that as being former teammates and former training partners. And of course, as always, thank you guys for tuning in. Remember to, if you like my shit, subscribe to my shit or spin it back this, baby. Bow, bow, bow. See you guys next time. Thanks for always tuning in. Big ups. Y'all man. You see me. This is the weekly scraps. Bye-bye.